Welcome, gentlemen. Welcome. Coach Steve getting his steps in. Smart
Yeah, buddy,
man.
too much seated time today, man. Too much. How do you do it?
I do the same thing as you. I try to move whenever I can between calls, certain calls you can take while walking, right? So, yeah, I do my best to get the movement in. Once Ben gets here and takes over, I'm actually going to transition to do the same as you.
Perfect. Yeah, man. It's something it's so funny how like when you start it and you get it in your schedule, when you don't have it, you crave it and you actually notice your attitude and like your behavior changes. You notice that?
For sure. Yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely. Well, it's
That's
all about
wild.
that left brain, right brain activation too, right? Like you're just cognitively sharper if you're taking more walks throughout the day.
Yeah, it's wild.
There are some studies on it. Actually came across some of those studies maybe 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. But I'll circle back and maybe we can drop them in the Telegram group for all the boys.
Perfect. I love that.
Yeah, for sure. Kurt, great to see you here again.
Thanks. Glad I was able to make it.
Yes, very nice to have you here.
And to your last point on the working in both hemispheres, it's absolutely right. There's cross crawl techniques, all sorts of things you can do to help that hemispheric connectivity.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Kurt, out of curiosity, do you intentionally plan like certain parts of your day where you go outside and you walk, or is it just a part of like pre or post training?
No, absolutely. I actually walk quite a bit. I'm in Florida, so
Yeah.
sunlight. I just got back from a walk before getting on this call because
Nice.
I texted because I was just remembered it was Wednesday. I'm like, hey, is there a call? And they said, yeah, it's every Wednesday. So,
Yeah.
but yes, I do. And some of it's with a ruck, some of it's for purpose, like a fitness or a low level aerobic purpose. And then others just and just being outside.
Just being outside. Yeah, for sure. Humans thrive outside in the natural environment. Andrew, what's going on, brother? How are you?
Good, man. Sorry, I was a minute late to the call. I was wrapping up with our realtor. We might be getting close to buying a house here in Vegas. So exciting
Nice.
stuff. Kind of a lot going on. But yeah, I mean, as you were talking, Mats, same thing for me. We've got family that's in Utah, and it's almost like, I get outside quite a bit, but there's something about just being out in nature and something about those Utah mountains that are different. So, get
Fair enough.
outside.
Fair enough. Is there a lot of desert around the area where you are in Vegas or?
Oh, it's all dirt. It's all dirt.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I think it's like pretty hot for most of the year, right? Like you do get a little bit of a chill at some point, but it's not really that chilly when compared to other parts of the country.
My hometown is a little over 3 hours from Vegas, and it's basically on the other side of the mountains near Palm Springs, and for the most part the weather's the same, but Vegas is different in that it could be not a cloud in the sky and then 2 hours later it's overcast, so it's a little weird in that way. But for the most part, all I know is the desert, man. I coming to Toronto and seeing you guys there, I'm like, oof, this is different for me.
Yeah, fair enough, man. I was in Tampa November, December, January, came back here in February, and within the first 7 days, I was like, why did I come back in February? Like, what had compelled me to make this poor decision? But yeah, I'm just getting everybody in here, and as we kind of let everybody in, whoever's not on screen, if you guys want to turn your screens on if you can. If not, that's okay too. Coach Steve and Andrew, do you guys want to share any wins from any clients?
Sure, I can go. I see Richard, Des, Morn, Al, I see you on there too. I had a call with Richard earlier today, actually. And I feel like every time I bring up Richard, I'm just always like the guy's just a stud as far as what he navigates with work, and he genuinely does have a very unique mindset in the sense of stuff's gotta get done. He gets thrown a lot of curveballs as far as work is concerned. And the guy's just got an awesome attitude about everything. So appreciate you very much, man.
Absolutely. If there's one thing that we can say about you, Richard, it's that you're very consistent And I'm not sure if there's a series of books that you've just followed through on that's the secret in the sauce from Coach Andrew or what it is, but maybe one day you can share it with us because I think everybody on this call is always aspiring to be more consistent with all the habits and behaviors that are self-serving, right? I'll pass it over to the head honcho here, the second most handsome bald guy in the room after Kurt, Ben.
Kurt definitely leads the way, man. Thanks, guys. Sorry, I'm a few minutes late. Just running behind. Small group today. We got to do a better job with our reminders. Get everybody out here. So hope everybody's had a great week. Kurt, welcome back, man. To what do we owe the honor?
Yeah, just kind of starting to get it into the groove of my mind that, oh, yeah, Wednesdays, that's those call days. So just kicking it off.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. So, Kurt, you may not know that I'm starting a telemedicine longevity business. I don't know if I mentioned that to you. We've got some great partners involved. And so a lot of my studies lately have been into kind of the medical side of optimization, something I know you're very familiar with, Kurt. So spending an enormous amount of my day, you know, my free time studying things ranging from stem cells to hormones to any type of longevity medicine, some things that are, you know, kind of on the cutting edge, some things that are on the fringe, looking at supplements, the current things you've been looking at for many, many years, and just really wanting to kind of brush up my game. You're certainly looking at peptides. I'm really trying to see what the big levers are, so to speak, versus what the small levers are. So it's been really fun, Kurt. I look forward to catching up with you about that. And I'm sure a lot of the gentlemen here would love to hear about the things that you're doing, the things that I'm discovering when it comes to longevity. So for those of you that don't know, Kurt is a longtime friend of mine. We've been buddies for, geez, it's got to be 10 years now. I'm coming up with 10 years. And maybe not that long, but pretty close. And so Kurt is someone that I look up to tremendously, and he's been a great advisor and mentor to me in the longevity space and the performance space and the mental side of performance. In many aspects, just overall being a greater man. So Kurt is a very welcome guest and a very big contributor to my life and indirectly to yours. So anyone listening, you know, Kurt's definitely contributed a lot to things that I think about. So some of the things that are kind of top of mind for me lately is I wanted to bring back our attention and our focus to putting first things first, so to speak. What are your big rocks? And so I think sometimes, you know, and Russ, this is something that may be relevant to you as well. Sometimes we get caught in the weeds of trying to do all the things, right? So, you know, Mats was talking about Richard being very focused, and that's true. And it's also relevant to think about. I'm going to suspect that Richard is someone who's very good at putting the first things first. As an example, I have a lot of people messaging me asking for peptide protocols, asking for supplement protocols when their nutrition is dog shit and they're sleeping poorly, or, you know, their hormone, they're looking for some, you know, simple little fringe change, or like, hey, what should I don't know, what type of watch should I wear? Or, you know, what is my Oura Ring saying about my REM sleep when they're not getting their meals in or they're drinking alcohol? Or, you know, what I really wanted to bring this conversation back to you today is I want you guys all to become reflective in your life. And the more we can reflect on how we're showing up with respect to the things that are most important to us in each of the most important domains of life, those are called our big rocks, and your big rocks are different than mine, right? And I can give you my big rocks. So I woke up strangely, yesterday, Wednesday. I think it was last Wednesday. I woke up in the middle of the night, 3:30 in the morning, and all I could think about was clarifying my goals. It's like a strange obsession with, I need to write down all my goals. I need to make sure I'm super clear and I know what my big rocks are in each of those areas. Because when you come into seasons of spring, call it, and it's there's a lot of things coming at you, there's a lot of opportunities, you have to make sure that your first things are your first things, the big rocks are the big rocks, and those are your non-negotiables, and everything else fits in around there. So I encourage you guys to create your domains of life, right? So we have obviously the body, and our health is a big domain. Our finances are a big domain. Our family is a big domain. And maybe even separate from that, parenting. Maybe even separate from that, your relationship. And then maybe separate from that, your social life or your things that bring you joy. And there's, you know, I could list up my 9 domains if you guys would like, but I encourage you to think about yours. So what are those domains that are imperative for you? You know, John DeMartini's got his 7. Mike DeSanti, my coach, has got his 7. I came up with 9 because I like to be a little more nuanced, a little more specific with what I'm doing with respect to parenting and relationship and finances, which is different than my business and how I'm showing up for you guys. Leadership is another one, like personal development. So there's so many different domains. And identify the 1, 2, or 3 things in those domains that are just non-negotiable for you. So instead of focusing on, you know, here's an example. I had a client come to me and said, "Ben, I want a new protocol for longevity supplements." And his diet is 60% of the way adhered to. So what do you think my response is? Right? I could give you some supplements, but the benefit you're going to receive is probably very small. If you're not sleeping that 7.5 to 8 hours, if you're not getting the right meals in, you're not choosing your foods very carefully, right? Trying to be as almost obsessive with your food quality as you can. Now, there's a balance or the difference between being obsessive and being neurotic, right? I don't think you should be neurotic, but I think you should, if anything, you're going to obsess over, it's your health, right? Some people obsess over their finances. Some people obsess over their relationships. Some people obsess over their social media. If you're going to obsess over anything, obsess over your nutrition quality. It's just so important, right? What goes into your body. Maybe you obsess over your sleep. Those things are going to be your primary drivers of performance. So I encourage you guys to think about that. And if you don't know what your big rocks are in each of those domains, like say, hey, Ben, hey, coach, whoever, what should be my big rocks in these things, right? When it comes to nutrition, it's really simple. It doesn't have to be complex, but you should know what those are. When somebody asks you, hey, what are you prioritizing right now with when it comes to your nutrition? You know. Hey, what are you prioritizing right now when it comes to your training? You know, right? There should be, because as soon as you allow that time for uncertainty, something else can creep in to fill its space. So we got to be like, hey, here's my focus in training. Here's my focus in nutrition. Here's my focus in lifestyle. Here's my focus in my relationship. Here's my focus in parenting. Here's my focus in my finances. Here's my focus in my business. Know those things. Gentlemen, I give you my word, the more effectively you know those things, the more likely you are to follow through on them. Because you want to keep them top of mind all the time. They'll guide your decisions. Does anyone ever have a hard time making decisions or maybe with being indecisive? Right? Many people do. So there's a very important opportunity for you to start guiding those decisions. What are my priorities? And here's the crazy thing. Sometimes your priorities are at odds. Sometimes it's like, hey, I want to save my money, but I want to eat as healthy as I possibly can. Those things are conflicting. So then you have to have a discussion. Well, which one is my higher value? Right? Do I value my health or do I value my finances? So that, I mean, and you can value them both, but you got to make a decision consciously, which one is more important to me right now in this phase of my life? Because, you know, eating all organic can be hard on the pocketbook, but it's also hard on your health to not eat organic. So you have to make that decision like, hey, what's my primary driver in this phase of my life? It doesn't have to be forever, but in this particular phase of my life. I used to be indecisive. Now I just don't know. Love it, Russ. So Russ, you asked some questions around peptides, around hormones, and around supplements. Anything specific you want me to touch on?
Ben, I know you've said it before, but I would love to hear those 9 just so we can make sure we're on the same page with that.
Yeah, let me pull them up. I literally just organized all my notes today and I moved it. Let me see. Yeah. So, my family, my body, my finances, my personal growth, my business, my relationship, my schedule, my geography, because obviously where I am, my spirituality. And the final one that I spent quite a bit of time on is my why. And so I have a very strong number of whys, mostly revolving around my children, mostly a lot revolving around my community, but mostly, revolving around my children. So again, I'm not going to share my whys because it's pretty personal stuff. It's just really a conversation to myself.
Would you share those again a little slower, Ben, so I'm writing them down or put it in the chat?
Yeah. So my family, my body, my finances, my personal growth, my business, my relationship, my schedule, my geography, my spirituality. I got them all.
Thank you.
Yeah. And again, those are mine, right? You can have your own. Thanks, Mats. I think, does that cover everything? Maybe. Does it not? Maybe. Those are the ones that are important to me right now in this phase of my life. And I'll also say, guys, that you should order those in order of priority to you, right? So it doesn't have to be the same order, right? For some of you, your spirituality may be at the top. For some of you, your finances may be at the top. Some of you, your relationship may be at the top. So I would just lean in on it. And so the reason I put the why in there is because when shit starts to get hard or when you start to get distracted, the key to keeping you on track is I got to know why it's important to me, because it's so easy to get distracted. So easy to, and the more you guys will know this, the more successful you get, the bigger the opportunity that comes along, right? When you start making money, you start building success, everyone wants a piece of the action. Everyone wants you to be part of their team. So you got to go, well, why am I doing this? And is the, everything I'm doing in alignment with my why? Anything you guys want to add, Kurt? Anything you want to add to that? I know you're a goal setting wizard.
I don't know if you remember, because this is back before you had actually left Tampa. I told you about my four domains framework. In simple language, it was health, wealth, self, and others. And that's very generalized, but it does contain the subcategories down for like all the things you mentioned. Yeah. And so I'm just going to read out here. So I changed it into four C's: calibration, connection, condition, and contribution, which all correlate to health, wealth, self, and others. And earlier when you were speaking, you mentioned about, the litany of things, the goals and all that stuff. And what I found is as this guys get serious about it, they can really start getting a kitchen sink approach to this. So the way I'm doing it is basically just like we do periodization with training, I periodize these things. It doesn't mean anything ever falls off completely, but it's the big levers. Once again, it's the weighting of it. And what I can best maximize at perhaps any given time of the year. I tend to like to do it in quarters. I'm a big fan, by the way, of this book called The 12-Week Year, if any of you guys are familiar with that. But, just connection goes towards others. It's my relationships with others. And that can be the family thing, how I keep in touch with friends, and how I just interact with people on a daily basis. And when I break down these particular goals, or even some of them can just go down to as low as a habit subset. Some are big, like there may be truly a training objective, financial objective, whatever, and it's going to be a bigger, heavier weighted goal. But even when that's not occurring, I'm still always looking at that as a 1% improvement. So let's just say I'm in a heavy conditioning, physical work, calibration, which is self-improvement. That's whether I'm learning new skills or or improving previously acquired skills. Well, in finance, it doesn't mean that one gets ignored, but in order to make sure that I'm really using my bandwidth in an effective pattern, that one kind of goes down to my, oh yeah, did I hit finance day 1% better? Which, you know, out there in the regular world, people would say, oh, I didn't buy the latte today or whatever. But anything small, but you're constantly touching it. That's the way I look at it. Am I touching each keystone piece in some way, knowing though that if I try to pay attention to every single one of them every day, I might be doing a disservice to myself and to the actual attainment of the goal itself. I don't know if that makes sense to you guys, but it works out pretty well.
So Kurt, how do you discern nuance within one of the domains, such as, say, for example, connection? And, you know, you have your people who are very important for you to connect with, and I'm sure you're very well aware of who those are for yourself. And there's obviously other people who are vying for your attention in many different ways and directions. So how do you, in your mind, navigate, you know, for lack of a better word, I guess, delegating your time, scheduling your time within the domain itself? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that kind of goes to the way there are some, and first of all, just of personal importance, you know, in touching base with them. Now, this also depends on the other person. You know, I got friends who, if we don't talk for 5 years, we can pick up a phone. It's like we just talked yesterday. So I always, those tend to be more in a 1% category because I know we're good. We share the same values. And so there's check-ins. Then there's the, what I call the ad hoc. That might be the guy I just met in an event somewhere. And perhaps there was a good connection. We're going to follow up on some things that lead to, you know, mutual benefit, whatever it may be. You know, that tends to get in a more scheduled category. But the ones for me that are really inculcated, which then I say almost become at my habit level, are those, you know, it's kind of like the five people you hang around the most, that type of thing, which, you know, in my case, in this phase of life, it's family, because obviously I'm around 3 14-year-olds and Karen, you know, 90% of the time. So that takes the majority of my effort. But it's almost a waiting. I try not to be too sterile and methodical about that. The one you picked is the one probably at least methodical about, because a lot of that just goes on personal intuition and feeling, you know. And I do at times actually go through, I'll do a random scroll through of my phone contacts and realize, holy cow, I haven't talked to this guy in a while. You know, you get in touch with someone and do it that way. But are you familiar with the Dunbar number?
Yeah.
Do you remember? Okay, from anthropology, guys, it's basically a guy named Robin Dunbar, an anthropologist, realized that humans only had the capacity in our development throughout the centuries to basically maintain about 120 to 150 really substantive connections. And that ranges from your core circle of 5 to 10 people, then going out in like rings of 20, 40, and so on. And at the 150 range, it's pretty much like maybe the person you see at the coffee shop you go to every morning, and you just know their first name or recognize by face, but there's some kind of mutual, you know, connection. And then beyond that, you really start losing bandwidth and are not making a substantive connection. So think about it. If you got 5,000 friends on Facebook, it doesn't mean you got 5,000 friends. Really, technically speaking, you can maintain about 150 in a substantive way. So that's where I concentrate my efforts is, you know, who are my 150? And I'm continually touching base with some on varying levels. And others, they get more attention.
Thanks, man. Super helpful. Anyone else have questions, comments, or feedback? Russ, do you want to throw out your question you had on Instagram the other day about, was it peptides or supplements? Oh, you also had a question about some training stuff. I'm not sure if you could ask that without the video, but.
Yeah, that was your answer was awesome. Yeah, I'm trying to remember what the question I asked you about peptides was. I remember about the training methodology as far as the extended range the length and range of the rep. And your response is basically, this guy doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about, which.
Well,
so it's, that wasn't exactly it. That was close to it,
but that was the best part of it.
Well, so the question from Russ, some version of it was, this gentleman on social media is advocating for lengthened range partials as being potentially the most useful modality now, you know, science verified modality for building muscle. And, you know, does that hold up or does it not hold up? And, you know, in isolation, it holds up. In a bigger picture, it absolutely does not. And what that means is, if we were to compare length of the range partials against full range of motion in the short term, 6 to 8 weeks, in pretty much anyone, length and range partials would seemingly outperform. And there's a number of reasons why it would. But as soon as you equated it that over 12 months, it would fall apart. The full range of motion would absolutely exceed it by far. So there's a slew of reasons. So these kids are just looking at stuff through a straw. They see one study and they just run with it. And they're not wrong. Like, there's value in length and range training, but it's just like not going to be the same long-term benefit.
So at what point would you incorporate long range partials into your workout? Would that be a regular thing, every set, every other set, every week, or would you periodize it?
Yeah, so the good question, and I would say the answer is they should be in there at some length, as often as you think you can recover from them. So here's the catch. Well, two nuances to this. One, beginners will always respond better to length and range partials than more advanced people because of something called adding sarcomeres in series. So if you want to look up the mechanism by which length and range partials increase hypertrophy, it's sarcomeres in series, which specifically means it's a different subsection of muscle that a muscle can only put so many sarcomeres in series and then it stops. You really can't get any more. So once you're through probably the first 3 years of training, that training will no longer be effective. But once you have it, you want to do it often enough to maintain it because you can lose it. So I would say, so that's one branch of it. So you may have to do it, I don't know, once every 3 to 4 weeks just to maintain sarcomeregenesis. Now, the other catch is when you're training in these length and ranges, it significantly increases the soreness of a muscle. But now we know that soreness isn't correlated with growth at all. Soreness is just correlated with inflammation. So it's more of a byproduct or even an inhibitory mechanism than it is a goal. Speaking specifically of soreness, so soreness is a side effect, not a goal. So when you're training with these length and range partials, you're going to increase more soreness. So you have to therefore make sure you have the recovery potential, the recovery capability, even an accelerated rate of recovery capability, to ensure that your body can recover from them and not delay your ability to get back in the gym. So Russ, in your case, do I have the mitochondrial density? Do I have the ability to rid my body of inflammation? Those are your two primary, and maybe aerobic fitness. Those are your three primary kind of recovery levers. Mm-hmm. So I would say, do you have those, right? And if you do, then you could probably get to do a little more often. But remember, it's not as useful in older guys. It's not as useful in advanced trainings.
Got it. As far as the peptide question, it was just a video from Jenna Breslin, and she was talking about her use of NAD, oxytocin, and a couple of others. And I asked, any thoughts on the supplement she recommended? Your response, you'd skip all of the above. NAD is still speculative. Absorption seems to be super low. And then you followed with the question of what problem are you trying to solve or goal are you looking to support? And I responded, you know me, to slow or reverse aging, look and feel like a superhero whenever mm-hmm. possible. So, I'm open to whatever I can do to, that helps with that I can afford, that's reasonable. So it was more a question of curiosity than need, but love to hear your thoughts.
So as I said, and Kurt may have some insight on this too, but NAD, IVs seem to be relative to the cost, or even injectables, relatively low bang for your buck. Some people seem to get decent benefit, but most people will say it's relatively low bang for your buck. With respect to what levers do we have to pull that are going to ultimately likely increase the quality of life and potentially the duration? So what are we looking at? You're already taking testosterone. That's a great one. Now, don't take too much testosterone. I know that there may have been some conversations about you wanting to bump that testosterone dose up, because that could cause problems too, right? So I would say testosterone is a big lever. Growth hormone is a big lever. Thyroid, if you need it, could be a big lever. Potentially IGF-1 for short durations. Epitalon could be a decent sized lever to do 3 times a year. Thymosin alpha-1 could be a decent lever to do three to four times a year. A thymosin beta-4 is something I do once a month. Actually, once every 2 weeks, usually, thymosin beta-4. There's some other like maybe useful supplements that seem useful based on studies, but I always think of like, kind of as I said when we started this, and Kurt, I'd love your perspective on, so Kurt sent me probably a month ago, N-acetylcysteine and glycine combination and why it's useful for everyone. But then you look at the research and it's done in all 70-year-old people, and apparently it's working on 70-year-old people, but is it going to work on younger demographics? So like I still use NAC and glycine because it seems like it's relatively like there's no negative, it seems. Glycine and N-acetylcysteine, both detoxification support, both potentially decrease or increase longevity. So I add that in. The other one, Russ, that I would look at, you know, I would save for it and do it once a year is stem cells. And
yeah, I've been talking to Matt Orban about that. Yeah,
I have a source of stem cells in the US now. So that may be able to save you a boatload of cash. We could talk about that another time.
Sounds good. Thanks.
Kurt, anything I missed? What did I miss as far as like big levers for longevity?
Well, I mean, you mentioned stem cells and we talk about big levers. We've talked before about the processes of apheresis, you know, drawing off your own plasma, as well as, if you can get it, the young plasma. Now, depending on what age range of a person we're talking about, if you're a guy under 35, it's not really going to make, apheresis will help you, but not the young plasma. In terms of the NAD, I'm with you, Ben, that one can be such a crapshoot, even though mechanistically we know the importance of it and its precursors in the body. So far, it is just not panning out as an effective way. This exogenous taking of it isn't panning out. I agree with you on all the peptides you mentioned. Also, the cyclic nature of taking these things, letting them do their job, and more importantly, not generalizing any supplement or any other type of procedure. It's getting your metrics on it, knowing what metric should change, actually, you know, getting the blood work, whatever testing there is, the True Diagnostics epigenetic methylation test to see if it's actually affecting telomere lengths, things of that nature. You know, for me, you know, I don't take any metric unless there's an action related to it, and vice versa. So if I'm taking a supplement, you know, some I have to just trust. Like if I was taking cerebrolysin, that peptide, I know mechanistically it's going to help, you know, neuronal growth and things like that. No way to really test that yet, but mechanistically it makes sense. But when it comes to things, you know, like NAD and the others, and some of the mitochondrial boosting supplements, there are ways of testing that. Just like simple one would be vitamin D supplementation. You got low vitamin D, you either, if you're still processing through your skin, that's great. As we age, like me, I'm living in Florida and sunlight doesn't do jack shit for my vitamin D levels, but supplementation does, and it shows up. So that's another thing, is whenever you're thinking about these protocols, think about what metric is tied to this so I can see if it's actually working for me. And then to your point, Ben, about the different times of year, the frequency of doing that, this goes back to not having this kitchen sink mentality. You know, figure your way through the year, the times it's going to be maximized while you're taking it, and the effects you should expect to see.
Thanks, man. And so the one thing that I don't know a huge amount about, Kurt, I don't know if you do, is any type of synergistic effect with peptides. So like I've seen Epitalon and Thymosin Alpha 1 potentially have a synergistic effect. That's from Cavinson lab. But other than that, like, oh, there's the growth hormone secretagogues. I just take straight growth hormone, man. Like, if I'm being honest, I think a couple I use a growth hormone, you know, like, sorry, one IU, 1.5, I use a growth hormone 4 or 5 days a week. Seems to just do miraculous things for healing of the body, man. Like, miraculous. So I think I'll probably stay on that for the rest of my life. Same with low dose testosterone. You know, there's other things you could potentially do, but it's always like, what problem are you trying to solve, Russ, and everybody?
When you say low dose testosterone, what's your definition of low dose?
I think you should probably aim for somewhere in the realm of 25 to 30 milligrams a day. And so actually do daily administrations, right? So like 20 milligrams might be enough for you. In general, it's more like likely 30, but you can kind of stay in that range every day. It's like small little drops. And you may want to consider, you should strongly consider doing HCG as well from time to time, or even enclomiphene, just to make sure, because I didn't realize that the importance of the feedback mechanism from HCG or enclomiphene on the brain. So follicle stimulating hormone, luteinizing hormone, have a feedback system on the brain, which can actually help with memory formation and retaining memory. So having those both in place, if I'm being honest, I forget which one is more important for the brain. I think it's follicle stimulating hormone. I think, no, it's gotta be luteinizing hormone, cause it's HCG. I think, don't quote me. It's one of the two that has a more important impact on the brain. Do you know, Kurt?
It's LH.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So taking HCG, you know, even one shot a week kind of thing, Russ, or you can do like, you know, 1 week of the month and then not do it again for a month. And like just getting some stimulation to the luteinizing hormone pathway.
Got it. Thank you.
Yeah, guys, the way to think about all this stuff is like, just augment your system. You don't want to shut anything down. You don't want to like blast anything necessarily. It's just like, how can I just augment myself back to what I felt, looked and felt like when I was 20? Right. So like, that's the markers that we're trying to use as our metrics in this new telemedicine business, is like, how can we turn back somebody's biological age to 21? Right. And is it possible? Who knows? But we're going to, that's the mission of the company. And like, that's what we're putting money toward in research. And, you know, can we turn back your brain? Can we turn back your nervous system? Can we turn back your cellular health? Can we turn back your organs? So we're focusing on each of those. And I don't know if it's possible, but I think it's a worthwhile goal. Does anybody else have questions? Things you got, it could be different topics. Any other feedback you guys want? You're too easy.
I got a question. Russell mentioned oxytocin earlier. I was just wondering where that was coming into play for you.
Not for me. It's just, it was one of the supplements that Jenna was mentioning that she used in that video. So I've got no experience with it myself.
Okay, because I was going to say most of the work out there with oxytocin is done more for females to include the dosages. And so if guys are trying to use it for whatever reason they would be, I would just say that you almost have to use triple the dosage that the female uses.
So the reason, Kurt, if I'm not mistaken, is some type of deeper level of emotional bonding, right? So like, I think her mention of it was like, it helps me have better sex. I'm like, okay. I don't know that a guy would experience the same thing, maybe, but I think oxytocin is kind of this hormone of bonding, right?
Yeah. Correct. It's the one that's excreted when mothers have the newborn and are, you know, beginning to breastfeed and all that. It's the level's much higher, and you know, it makes sense from an evolutionary perspective for that. One of the ways I've seen it used most is actually in conjunction with other therapies. Like someone's doing trauma work and they're using ketamine, they might use oxytocin in conjunction with it. So as they're going through whatever the work, they're going through the questioning with the therapist or whatever, that there's more of an openness. They're kind of taking their negativity down. Their guard is down so that they can participate more fully in what's going on. I personally have noticed absolutely zero difference using it. And for men, it's just a strange animal.
Kurt, staying on the hormone realm, have you ever experimented or researched Dostanex? So cabergoline? No, it's
cabergoline, huh? Yep. No, I did a very superficial dive into it, but it's way down on my list of experiments.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, that's it for me. No other feedback on that. That's good. Any other questions or comments? Everybody's, let me get on with my Wednesday. Andrew, how are you?
I'm good. I was telling everybody when the call started that Kim and I were wrapping up looking for a new house. I think we might have found it. So that's exciting.
Good for you, man. Congrats. Hopefully you lock it in.
Yeah, thanks. Ben, I did have a quick question for you in regards to, you know, those nine pillars that you shared. You know, obviously everybody knows your past. And at one point or another, everybody on here wants to put on muscle. And on the coaching side of it, managing people's schedule and time commitment is obviously a massive component. So I'm curious, hindsight's 2020. Once you have kids, your life changes forever. But I'm curious, during that time when you were purely focusing on bodybuilding and then kind of shifting into more of a professional space and kind of stepping out of that chapter, at kind of a global level, let's say that still the focus is putting on muscle, but as far as the time commitment and what you know now, is there anything that you would kind of share for these guys?
Yeah. So I don't think you need more than 60. If the goal is exclusive, so I'm gonna frame this. If the goal is exclusively muscle building, you don't need more than 60 minutes a day. However, if fat loss is also a goal, meaning you're over 12% body fat, then I always say you got to add an extra 30 minutes a day to account for that. So you're looking at, you know, somewhere between 75 and 90 minutes a day. Because it does require just more energy expenditure if you're trying to burn fat. So if it's pure muscle building, there's no reason why you need more than 60 minutes a day. Unless, again, then there's another asterisk. How's your mobility? If your mobility is bad, then you've got to add an extra 15 minutes on, right? So in my program, I ask my guys to commit to 2 hours a day. So that's because we're doing weight training for an hour to hour and 15. We're doing mobility for 15 minutes. We're doing cardio for 30 minutes. So everyone, when they start the program, like, listen, is it realistic for you to commit 2 hours a day, 5 days a week? Doesn't have to be during the week, but it could be Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It doesn't matter. What it was, 4 or 5 days a week. And that's because we really, all the guys I work with are over 40. We really prioritize mobility. We really prioritize VO2 max. And it's not just like, we're not just looking for mediocre results. We're looking for the all-in results. So I would say that's the top end, like, you know, hour 45 to 2 minutes, five times a week. And the bottom end, I would say for great progress is 60 minutes a day. And I would say that could be 7 days a week, because like, if it's important to you, you just have to make the time. You have to schedule it. It can't be like, maybe, maybe not, you know? And so compared to what I did during my career, you probably heard the stories, like, there probably wasn't a day that I didn't go to the gym for at least 2 hours, like literally 7 days a week. And most days was closer to four. When I was competing, it was closer to five, sometimes more, which I don't think that was right. I just didn't know any better. And I didn't want to leave any stone unturned. I always thought, like, I'd rather go into this thing knowing that I did everything I possibly could, not saying that was the right path. But like, I was like, I just didn't want to, because in my brain, remember my story as a child, and even up until my mid-teens, is that I was lazy. So the way I compensated for my belief internally that I was lazy was, I'm like, I'm just going to outwork everyone. Like, anyone that comes to the gym, even if I'm done my workout, I'm still going to kick the fucking ass, because I didn't want to be lazy. Like, I hated the label that I'd given myself. My family had given me that label too. It's funny. I had dinner with my sister last Saturday, and we were talking about me in school as a kid. She goes, you weren't bad in school. You weren't stupid. You were just lazy. I was like, I wasn't lazy. I just didn't value it. But looking back on it, like, man, if it came to sports, I wasn't lazy at all. I was a fucking animal. But when it came to school, I was like, I didn't care. So it's not necessarily that I was lazy, that I didn't value it. And so even though I took that identity with me, it served me, maybe, something that I question, I suggest you all question your identities. right? What is the identity or the beliefs that you have that maybe hold you back in your life? You know, I've had amazing people in my life, including Kurt being a really big player in my life, who question my beliefs, who by, you know, with their presence, with their words, with their questions, have enabled me to question who I thought I was relative to who I know that I am or who that I am now, right? That was a really important transition for me, is losing the disempowering beliefs and just being like questioning the disempowering beliefs, maybe. Long-winded answer, Andrew. Does that get to the bottom of it, or do you want some more?
No, yeah, that was great. I just been running into it a lot, and you know, spending this time with Beardsley and just questioning everything from program design, how long training is for people, and how that fits into everybody's life, right? Because I think that it's super common for outside of this circle in this community for people to feel uncertain with their training or to not have clarity.
Yeah. So I would say, you know, if someone's crunched for time, the thing that made the biggest difference for me and still makes the biggest difference for me if I'm crunched for time is I'll actually start my workouts with something that's very high intensity. So if you're in my gym in Tampa, I'll do a wind gate. I'll do three wind gates, which will take me 2 minutes, but it'll get my heart rate up, my blood pressure up, my body temperature up, and I'm ready to go, right? So I'm like, it doesn't take me 15 minutes to warm up, it takes me two. So starting with something like that's a useful lever. Again, if you're not in a rush, then don't do it. But in the first 5 to 10 times you do it, it's going to suck. But eventually you just get used to it, it just becomes normal. Dez is asking, opinion on psychedelics. I have no experience, but I've had a friend who took ayahuasca, and the experience he explained was intriguing and quite mind-blowing. Is this something you would advise experimenting with or pursue the research of? Dez, if you're going to pursue psychedelics, I would definitely not start with ayahuasca. Ayahuasca would be very much a more further down the line type of psychedelic. The question I would throw at you, man, is, so I've done a lot of psychedelics in my life. I don't know about a lot, but a fair amount. And some of them are useful. Most of the time it's not. You have to know what you're looking for, and you have to be willing to receive everything you get. And it's not always the message you want, or you can't go in with like, oh, I want this message, you're going to get it. It doesn't always happen. Sometimes it's very painful. Sometimes it's jarring. I've had some of the most traumatic experiences in my life from psychedelics. You learn from them, but sometimes it could take a very, very long time. So I don't advocate them, nor do I dissuade people from taking them. I think they were a great tool for me at a certain point in my life, and now I have no desire to do them again, or at least not frequently, maybe, you know, once a year or something like that, but not frequently. And the dosage is a really important thing, Des. So I would say a lower dose is worth experimenting with, like microdosing of mushrooms or something like that. Like, experiment with it, put your big toe in. But if you really want a transformative experience, it requires a larger dose, and typically requires a larger dose, maybe not always. And then you got to weigh the pros and the cons, man, because there's definitely cons. Nothing in this world nothing good comes without a potential downside. And I'll say in closing, if you're going to experiment with ayahuasca, be very cautious as to where you do it and who you do it with, because it'll certainly be one of the most transformative experiences of your life, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's a good thing. So you have to make sure that the environment is right, the medicine is right, the person curating it is right. There's a lot of things that could go south, man, a lot. So I'll give you an example. I know a lady who's a Hollywood actress who decided she was going to hire a shaman. Shaman came into her home, gave her the medicine, and she's like, I don't feel good, I need you to leave. And he goes, nope, I'm not going anywhere. You know, like, she was by herself, right? And so now imagine you're under this medicine, and this strange man won't leave your house. And you're like, not that that could be you, but just as an example, like, gotta be careful, man. You gotta be careful who you're with, who's giving you the medicine, what they're giving you. She ended up being okay. Had a really, really bad experience, PTSD, traumatized for the next 3 years. Long story, but there's weird shit that can happen. I had a weird experience in one of my ayahuasca experiences. Again, I'm always happy to share, but I would just caution you, man, like nothing is a perfect panacea. That being said, MDMA with your partner once a month is like the best marital counseling you can ever imagine. Seriously, I'm not even kidding. If you haven't challenged with your partner, I would not dissuade you from asking your doctor to do some parental marital counseling. Bamshi, you laughing? You got a question, Bamshi?
No, I think I got the answer. Like, I was also looking at that psychedelics, right? Like, what is the benefit of that one? But I think I got your answer. Like, no, yeah.
Yeah, and you did mushrooms in Costa Rica, yeah?
Yes, and then that was really good for me. Like that really helped. But I didn't do that after that, and I'm not planning to do that. But I don't know if there is any real benefit out of that one. That's what I was trying to think.
Maybe in Costa Rica again, we'll talk about it, Mamshi.
Okay.
Yeah, so we are looking for a retreat center in Costa Rica for the men's retreat in December. That's not going to be something that we're putting on ourselves. That's just something that we're going to offer to anyone who attends as something you can go sign up for afterwards. Yeah, so we're considering it. I just don't want it to be a muscle intelligence event. It's going to be like do on your own type thing. And we're just going to, yeah, make sure it's a safe place. You guys good? No further questions?
Hey, Ben, I got a question.
Shoot out.
We've got time. Regarding contrast therapy.
Yeah.
Cold plunges and sauna or steam rooms. And about a year ago, I recently took up cold plunges, not a formal cold plunge, but just the cold shower. I used to do the 2 minutes at the end of the shower, and I've graduated. Now I take 100% cold showers, except at night, just to help trigger my deep sleep. And I also incorporate steam room just at my gym. And I used to just do like 5 to 10 minutes each day. But then the more and more research I've done specifically on the hot therapy and like what I noticed in your T-Max program, it's not a little bit every day. It's more like get in there for 10 minutes, then 15 minutes and graduate and work your way up. And it seems like the consensus or majority of people go in there for a longer duration, but only maybe like 2 to 3 times a week. Can you maybe just share your thoughts on that and recommendations?
Yeah. So the current research is coming out of Norway. The lady's name is Susanna Søberg. I don't agree with her position. You know, oftentimes these researchers will come out and be like, oh, this is what we found, but they just haven't gone deep enough into the research. So she says, I think it's 30 minutes a week of cold. No, 11 minutes a week of cold. And like some small amount, like 60 minutes total a week for heat. I don't agree with it. I think when you're going into heat, you're really trying to induce something called heat shock proteins. And I think that has to be a different level for everyone based on your experience. So the more experienced you are, the more tolerant you are to managing stress, I suspect the more you're going to need, just like muscle building, the more experienced you are, the harder you got to go. So if you're someone who's a beginner and you're in there 15 minutes and you feel like, gosh, I'm overheating, and maybe you step out and you go back in and do it again, like you do that a couple times a week, 3, 4, 5 times a week, just get to the point of being very uncomfortable. You're probably going to elicit heat shock proteins, it seems, right? Someone who's more advanced, I may go in for 45 to 60 minutes at a significantly higher temperature, right? There's times when I'll go in at 200 degrees or 220 degrees Celsius, where Fahrenheit, I don't know, whatever, I think it's Celsius. Am I wrong? Is it Celsius or Fahrenheit?
Celsius is much higher. If you're going in that, you're basting. So I would say you're Fahrenheit.
So 200 or 200 Fahrenheit, and staying in for, you stay in 30 minutes at 220 degrees Fahrenheit, you're cooking. Like going in at 220 is very uncomfortable. Like you can't breathe uncomfortable. So you don't eat as much, right? So I think it's very different. So I guess to answer your question, do your best to get very uncomfortable. Now, here's a little hack. You got to get yourself a sauna hat because usually the reason people stop in the sauna is because their head gets really hot. And if you wear a sauna hat, you'll notice that you're actually not that hot. So if you just pay attention to where most of the heat is, it's almost always going to be concentrated in your head. So by wearing a sauna hat, you'll allow your body to get much hotter before you dip out of the sauna feeling like you're overheating. So I'd stay on that. I'd stay in just kind of the subjective realm for now, but just maybe charting it for yourself when it comes to the heat. When it comes to the cold, again, depending on your temperature, there's no way that a cold shower is going to do anywhere near the same as a cold plunge. So with a cold shower, you're really just, I think at that point, you're just looking to induce adrenaline. So adrenaline, a little adrenaline spike typically will kind of reset the nervous system. Whereas with a submersion into a cold plunge, you're actually going to start chilling the inside of the body, right? So you're creating more of a brown fat adaptation. So brown fat are these metabolically active fat cells that can help burn more calories. That'll never happen from cold showers, I don't think, where you're still going to get a bit of an adrenaline response, which will give you the energy and then potentially the crash. Potentially, maybe not. It'll give you the dopamine, which you won't necessarily get the overall benefit of the cold plunge, which is dropping systemic inflammation, which is increasing brown fat production, increasing mitochondrial biogenesis.
Great.
Hey.
Well, thanks. That's all super helpful. I'll look into the sauna hat to start. That's an easy one.
Yeah, so
Hey.
Matt's saying, Jocko is saying 30 minutes in the sauna, 5 minute cold plunge. Repeat that 3 times, Matt's. That'd be
Yeah,
insane.
there's a discussion online. I'll pull it up for you and send it over when I find it again.
That'd be super intense. 5 minutes, depending on how cold the cold plunge is, right? If that's 32 degrees, there's no way you're staying there 5 minutes. If it's 60 or 50 degrees, you're fine. So it really depends.
Yeah, Jocko's team is like experimenting with it. They've already done it, and now they're getting Huberman involved to like get some analysis in on it and all that.
So I'll tell you, when I was competing, I used to do some silly stuff with cold. Like I used to fill my tub with ice and stand there, and like I would basically shiver until I passed out. Because I was told that actually I read that it was going to help body fat, and it was treacherous. But I would go like 20 minutes and probably 32 degrees, like super cold. Which I don't think that was smart. I was just young and stupid.
Hey, Ben, I'd never heard of a sauna hat before you just mentioned it, so I immediately pulled it up on Amazon. These are made of wool. They kind of look like a Gilligan's Island hat. Is that what you're
Correct.
talking about?
Yep, that's the
Okay.
one. Styling, man. Yeah, that's
They
style
have
in the sauna.
one with Viking horns like a helmet. I may go
Yeah,
with
get that one.
that.
Nice.
Take a picture,
Super
Russ, and
helpful.
send it to
Thank
me.
you.
I'm just
Got it,
glad there's
Matt.
someone
You got
else. I'm glad there's someone else who knows what Gilligan's Island is.
Yeah, I kind of dated myself on that one.
Ben could be trolling you right now and you wouldn't even know. Send us a pic, Russ.
No, not trolling. Cool, gents. Great call. I appreciate you all. Thanks for being here, Kurt. I appreciate your wisdom, man. Thanks for being here. Russ, thanks for all the questions and everybody else.
Thank you.
Have an amazing week. Thanks, guys.